Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. My name is Laura Alley. I'm the President and Chief Executive Officer of Triple One Sales, located in Chatham, New Jersey. I wanted to start off today's call by just expressing my condolences to the family of that poor two-year-old little boy in Orlando. It's just heartbreaking. Whenever you're a mom and you hear stuff like that, it's just awful. So I just wanted to welcome back to the show today two of my favorite female business owners, Catherine Nuck and Suzanne Serra, the founders and chief executive officers of Shift HR Compliance Training, also headquartered in Chatham, New Jersey. We had a great event last night called Making New Jersey the Next Silicon Valley, calling it Silicon New Jersey, and I always think of Catherine and Suzanne when that subject comes up because they have a great tech company and a great presence here in Morris County. So welcome to the show, Catherine and Suzanne.
Thank you so much, Laura. We're happy to be here today.
We're so excited that you guys are back again. Your last broadcast was one of our most popular from a re-listen standpoint, so thank you again for joining us. So why don't you guys tell us, before we begin and get into today's topic, which is how CEOs and businesses can prepare for an affirmative defense in the unfortunate event if they get sued by an employee or a former employee. But before we get that, why don't you tell our listeners out there a little bit about Shift HR?
Sure. So Shift HR Compliance Training is an online training company, and what we've tried to do is to take the interactivity and the engagement that we're able to convey during instructor-led training and move that into an online, internet-based mode. So we don't want our learners to lose that connection that you often have with an instructor, so we've really tried to create the most dynamic product that's out there that deals with HR compliance issues, whether it's preventing harassment and discrimination, whether it's combating unconscious bias, and so on and so forth.
Awesome. And it does all that. I know I've heard great things from some of your clients about it. So the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that employers may be held liable for sexual harassment if they do not exercise reasonable care to prevent and properly correct any such harassment behavior. I'm reading this from an article that was recently published in Training Today, and I think that's where our subject today came from, is the importance of preparing for an affirmative defense. So can you tell our listeners out there a little bit about what the subject means and, you know, what we'll be talking about today when it comes to that?
Sure. Yeah, so what we wanted to talk about today was the fact that particularly in New Jersey, the climate is not exactly very employer-friendly. But the affirmative defense is actually one of those areas where companies can take affirmative steps to reduce their risk. So what the affirmative defense is, and you mentioned it, is that to the extent that a court finds that the company has taken reasonable steps to prevent and correct harassment that occurs, that it can insulate them from liability in the case of somebody actually making a claim for any type of harassment. So it's proactive steps that the company can take to protect itself. And we can talk about exactly what that looks like.
Yeah,
and it's interesting. Oh, go right ahead, Laura.
I was just going to say, it seems like there's more and more cases in the news every week I read about. Not only are there more cases, but there's higher payouts for these cases. So I just think that what you guys are doing is such important work for the business community, right? Do you agree?
Absolutely. And the interesting thing and sort of frustrating thing from our standpoint is there's such easy, relatively inexpensive steps that companies can take to protect themselves and offer themselves this affirmative defense that they otherwise will not have. And it never ceases to amaze me and Suzanne that we'll meet with companies, many of whom are very sophisticated Fortune 500 companies, who are not taking advantage of building that affirmative defense when they could do so easily. And it would put them in such a better position, not only in terms of obviously creating a better work environment by having these procedures in place, but also the back end of it, trying to eliminate or decrease the number of claims that are filed against companies.
Yeah, that's exactly a great point. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, what we've done, as you know, in our law firm and in the training company, is we've distilled all of the information from the cases and put the affirmative defense into a couple of simple, practical steps for companies. And to Catherine's point, these are very simple, straightforward things, and we are often surprised how many companies aren't doing it. And we think it's possibly just because they're not aware of it.
Yeah, I think you guys are making a great point. Like, there's one aspect is you want to do these steps, which I know you're going to get into in a short bit, to protect the company. But the other thing is to make the culture better and more welcoming for all diverse employees, which is the goal I know of many CEOs out there. I don't want to date myself, but I worked for big companies in the 90s. And back then, I mean, when the internet was kind of just taking off, it was like who next to you would be doing inappropriate things. It made you feel really uncomfortable. And it did affect your productivity, because I remember there were times where I just wanted to leave the office. I just didn't feel right, and that wasn't good for the company from a productivity standpoint. So why don't you talk a little bit about the simple ease and steps that a CEO out there listening could take?
Okay, and before we get into those simple steps, I just want to add on to your point, which is such a good one, that there's an absolute business case for putting this in place and making sure that as an employer, you're doing everything legally required and beyond to prevent harassment and discrimination in the workplace. And it really rings true to me and Suzanne. You know, we both used to be partners at large law firms. Now we're not only partners at large law at a smaller boutique firm practicing employment law, but we're business owners, and we see the direct relationship between a team that's functioning at a high level with a high level of morale and how productive that team can be for customers, clients, et cetera. And so it's in every employer's best interest to make sure that they have this in place, not only from a legal perspective, but because they want to be the most successful, profitable company that they can be.
That's a great point.
Yeah,
and you hit on something that I wanted to bring up, is that you're both successful and accomplished attorneys. How does that background help the new clients with the Shift HR compliance training model? I'm sure it's a tremendous benefit to your clients.
Well, we definitely think so. And I think it's one of the ways for sure is that we get to see kind of on the back end the implications of not doing the appropriate training. So in the cases that we are defending for our clients, who are companies of all sizes, we see the impact that it can have on the litigation if, for example, the policies aren't properly put into place or the proper training hasn't been done. And I think in the training modules that we've created, we've really pulled from real-life scenarios so that the trainer finds the training to have a lot, the learners find the training to have a lot more credibility because it's real life scenarios.
Right.
And another way our experience as employment attorneys really helps is that we make sure that Shift HR compliance clients get exactly the right training they need. So there are some training companies out there that will just sell one product for all employees in the workplace on preventing harassment and discrimination, whereas we know as employment lawyers, supervisors need to have a different training that talks about their distinct responsibilities under these federal and many state laws, and that the non-supervisory employees should not get that training because it may give them information that would not be helpful and could potentially be harmful. So we really make sure we steer clients in the right direction with the exact training they need, nothing more, nothing less.
See, I want to get back to that because I think that's such an important point. But you're talking about the training that you provide. Is that one of the main things that a company can do to prepare for an affirmative defense, or is there anything else?
Yes. That's a great segue back. So, yeah, there's really three primary steps that a company needs to take in order to avail itself of the affirmative defense. The first is that they need to have a written anti-harassment policy that they widely publicize to all their employees. And a lot of the cases say the same thing. It can't just be a policy that's drafted and put in a book and put on the shelf. It needs to be disseminated to all employees. It needs to be available to all employees, whether it's in the company handbook, on the company intranet, whether it's emailed annually by the president or CEO. You need to make sure that every single employee in the company has access to that policy. So that's number one. And again, creating a policy is very, very simple. It's not costly at all, but it's the critical first step. Otherwise, the affirmative defense is not available. The second
step. Does
it
need to be posted also, Suzanne? Because I notice in some businesses they post certain things in like the break room. Does it have to be posted visibly?
Well, the policy itself should be visible, so it really depends on the way the workplace is configured. So, you know, there's a lot of remote workplaces nowadays, and so it really does depend on how the workplace is configured. What we recommend is we do recommend including it in the company handbook. We recommend having it, if you have any kind of a company intranet, having it available. Having it, if you don't have that, having it posted or available somewhere in the office would be great. And then we also recommend having it be given with the offer letter anytime somebody's hired, and that it be acknowledged by every single person who comes and works for the company, so that if down the road they were to make some kind of a claim against the company, we have evidence that they actually received a copy of it and are acknowledging that they received it and read it.
That's great
advice. To Suzanne's point, the key is really making sure as an employer you're doing everything you can to show your commitment to preventing harassment and discrimination in the workplace, so that if you're challenged, you can stand up and say, look, we did all of these things. We posted our policy. We distributed our policy. We trained on our policy, and so on and so forth. So these are small steps, but they go a long way.
Great advice.
Right. So the second piece that an employer needs to have is that they need to have an effective process for investigating and remediating claims of discrimination and harassment. So really what that translates to is they need to have a complaint process. So in their written policy, it would specifically identify who an employee is going to report complaints to, and then that person has to be trained on how to immediately respond, investigate the complaint, and then take the proper steps to make sure that if there is misconduct, that it's immediately remedied. So that's number two. And then the third piece is that the company needs to be doing appropriate training, and that ties really back into what we're trying to accomplish not only at the firm with our live training, but with Shift with our online training. So the company needs to show that they are, to Catherine's point, really putting their money where their mouth is, and not only do they have the written policy that they disseminate, but they're actually going out there and actively talking about this topic to their employees so that they really understand what the policy stands for.
Because I have to tell you, Laura, there have been so many times where I've gone in to conduct in-person instructor-led training on preventing harassment and discrimination, and questions come out from managers and non-supervisors alike stating, well, who do we complain to? Who do we bring complaints to? Who do we let know if we see something going on?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, they've all received copies of their policies. They all have handbooks. They all have the postings in their offices. But the fact of the matter is, until you draw their attention to it and walk them through it in either an online training or an instructor-led training, it's just not gonna resonate and stick with them, and they won't know what to do.
So this training, like, how do you know it's resonating? Like, do you guys have success stories or case studies? Because I would think that it would be such a great thing, like, to have training that actually makes a dramatic difference with a company's culture, where people not only sit through the training but actually embrace it and do what they've learned. Like, do you find that that's the case after a company goes through your training?
Yeah, it's interesting that you asked that, because again, we don't do training for the sake of training as a CYA.
Yeah.
We do training because we want it to be impactful. And we'll point blank, if we're doing instructor-led training, for example, say this training is about you and your takeaway and what will make your job more effective as a manager or an employee at the company. And there have been so many instances where managers, employees come up to us afterwards saying, thank you for the training. That was so helpful. You know, we weren't looking forward to it. Most of this training is boring, not effective. And we get these same compliments with the online training as well, where people enjoy being part of the process and appreciate being part of the process, because it is all about them and imparting knowledge and important, relevant information to them. And that's really the key.
Yeah, and I think back to the point you made earlier, Laura, about culture. When we transmit that information to the employees during the training, they know that their company cares enough about them and the culture to bring us in and impart all this information to them. Because really, the people who are getting trained, they're the ones that have really the burden and the responsibility of creating the culture. And so by us sharing this information and this knowledge with them, it gives them the ability to go out and make the culture better at the company.
And to that point, because every business person, every manager, every team leader should care about that culture and making it a better company. I had recently an HR professional who brought me in to do training say that She really felt that after the training was done, she felt vindicated because she said management and the business units had given her such a hard time about taking people away from their job and spending the time on training, and that they didn't know whether people would get a lot out of it. And she said the feedback was so incredibly positive about how helpful the training was that it made her job easier, and it made her look great, as it should, because she's doing the right thing, making sure her company is protected and doing these types of trainings.
And it always feels good to do the right thing. I firmly believe that. That's a great that's a great thing you guys should blog about, because that's really good, I think. That's a good perspective on it. Like, there's the training that people just go through for the motions, but then there's the training that is actually inspiring, engaging people to behave in a much more positive, productive way. So
right.
Is this
Kills
kind of stuff, though, let me ask you, is this just for big companies, though, or... Like, what's your advice to our listeners out there that maybe don't have a company the size of Xerox, where I came from, but, you know, still feel like they might need to implement something like this? Is your solution applicable for companies of all sizes?
Yeah, that is a great question, and it's actually one of the areas that we're so surprised to find that people don't really understand that these laws, especially in New Jersey, they apply to companies of all sizes. So the New Jersey anti-discrimination statute covers companies if they have one or more employees. So really, it's any and every company. And under federal law, that statute kicks in at 15 employees. So if you're a New Jersey company, you have this obligation, and the only way you can create the affirmative defense for yourself is by doing all the exact same things that a large company can do. And that's what we said earlier. The great thing about this is it's really not an expensive proposition for companies to take these proactive steps, to put together the policy, to have a complaint process, and to do the training. Really doesn't cost them a lot of money, and what they can save on the back end in terms of reducing their exposure. Because what would happen is, and we've litigated plenty of cases for companies that have, let's say, 5 or 10 employees, the same laws apply, the same damages can be assessed against them, and it's really hard for us to defend those companies because oftentimes they haven't taken the time to implement these proactive steps, and then they're basically stuck litigating this case to the very end. If we can avail ourselves of this affirmative defense, the benefit to the company is that we can try to get them out of the case earlier, and frankly, what we try to do at the outset is negotiate with the other side that the case is really going nowhere because our client has a policy,
right.
They have a great complaint process, they've done the training, and the plaintiff's lawyer is not as likely to want to take the case or pursue the case when all of that's in play. So it's absolutely critical that all companies think about doing all these three things.
So two things that come to mind after just listening to you. One is what you just said about negotiating ahead of time from a PR, public relations standpoint, would be, I think, tremendous because nobody wants their name tied to anything negative, I would think. And second of all, I work with a lot of smaller businesses throughout the state, and I know that they're not doing this. So, you know, it's really triggering in my mind that people really need to make this part of their strategic plan for the year and incorporate these best practices into their actions for the year, because a smaller company like one of my clients that gets hit with one of these lawsuits that I read about with the damages associated to it, that would put them out of business. They don't have that kind of bank account that a bigger company has to fund the damages piece of the suit.
Yeah, or even the attorney's fees. I mean, that's exactly right. There's more to lose when you're small, because if you're a 100-person company, are you going to be able to pay for hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of attorney's fees just to defend you, and hopefully you won't have
Another
to pay the
point.
Damages at the end, but that's on top of it. Whereas if you're a billion-dollar company, you've got it in the budget. You don't want the exposure, of course, but it can put you out of business if you're small.
And Catherine makes a critical point here. You know, there's of course, the PR angle. That's huge. But what really hurts the smaller companies is that when they have to defend themselves, the average employment discrimination case is at least $150,000 in legal fees, and that's if you win. So that's before you pay a dime in damages or settlement. So having all of these things in place is critical to trying to get out of the matter early on before you have to pay to defend yourself.
Okay, so we've run a little over time today, but like I started off the segment or the episode by saying, you two are quite inspiring. You're so filled with great information and knowledge. That's why we love having you on our show. I know there's two things coming up for our listeners if they want to find out more or get access to more information, because I think honestly, we could have probably gone on this subject at least another hour. It's very interesting. It's very, you guys are very informative. So you're going to be at a show next week in Washington, D.C., right?
Yes, we're going to be at CHIRM's annual conference Sunday, Monday, Tuesday next week.
And what's your booth number for anybody out there that's going to it? Do you remember off the top of
your
head?
You know what? It's under shift. They have a listing. I don't have the booth number, but if you email me, I can get you the booth
and
number.
And it'll be in the program when people get there. And then you also are having a webinar, right, coming up?
Yes. We're having a great webinar on unconscious bias awareness and combating unconscious bias in the workplace. And that is on Monday, June 27th at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we've done the webinar a few times before, and it keeps coming back because everybody just loves it and they get so much out of it. So we really encourage anybody who's interested in that topic of unconscious bias awareness and how that ties into eliminating harassment and discrimination in the workplace, we encourage everybody to join us.
Excellent. And you guys really have, I think, become the thought leaders on that subject. So I encourage our listeners to go to the shiftelt.com and go to the website. I think it's under the event section or the news and event tab on their website, and you could register and see the information for the webinar. So thank you so much, you guys. I really, really enjoyed today's show. I know our listeners did as well. I hope you guys have huge success at your show next week. And, you know, I just want to say thank you again.
One other thing, Laura, if you don't mind me saying,
sure.
We have a Facebook page now. And if people want to follow us on Shift's Facebook page, there's also a link to the webinar on there as well. And we'll be posting articles that people might find, you know, interesting. And then all of our upcoming events will be on there as well. So anyone that's on Facebook can follow the Shift page as well.
Excellent.
Thanks so much, Laura.
Thank you, you guys. Have a great day. We'll talk to you guys
soon.
Thanks.
You too.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.